I hear Vivianne's voice through the cacophony. Her words intermingle with the voices in my mind. Raphael sits next to me, stroking my back. Just give Nia a moment. I listen to them talk from a distance, wondering who Nia is. It takes me a few deep breaths to remember. Ah, Nia might be me. What's wrong with her? Vivianne snaps. What has she done? She'll be fine, says Raphael. Why don't you tell me the fucking truth? The woman says sharply. She's overdosing on some kind of magic, isn't she? I can feel it emanating from her. Except, it isn't sentinel magic, because there was no veil in there, so what exactly is happening? Raphael lets out a sigh.
Telepathy. She used it on too many people at once. But you cannot tell anyone she has diametric magic. We need her.
He sounds short, impatient.
They will kick out anyone with two powers. They'll say she's going to be another Mordred. She's not trained in telepathy, so she didn't know the dangers. We've been trying to suppress that magic, but I guess she thought it might be useful. Vivianne, we need her.
Freya swears. How many minds did she read? 3, 4? If it's 4, she might already be lost to us. She's strong, but I don't know if she can hold the thoughts of that many people at once.
I don't know, says Raphael. It might be more than 4.
I think it's 12,
I mumble.
Or 13, it's hard to count because they keep jumbling together.
Silence follows my words, and I wonder for a minute if they're even here, or more voices in my mind. I open my eyes to find Raphael, Vivianne, and Freya all staring at me stunned.
What?
I ask faintly.
Please tell me you didn't.
Raphael's fingers flex on my back.
Telepaths aren't supposed to read more than 1 or 2 minds close together. Because they can lose themselves in the sea of consciousness.
The sea of consciousness, I repeat, staring at a flagstone floor. It sounds nice and appropriate. That's what I have in my mind right now. A nauseating, churning sea.
It can't have been 12,
Raphael says firmly. For a moment, I almost believe him. At least 12, I repeat.
That's impossible, Freya blurts.
There was Lumos and Gaia and Belroar.
I count them on my fingers.
And Calixto and Nia.
You're Nia, Vivianne snarls.
All right, I'm Nia. Anyway, there are at least 12. 13 including Nia, but I guess she doesn't count. I mean, me. Me doesn't count. I doesn't count.
I frown. That doesn't sound right either, but the words are confusing. So many of them. Nia knows a lot of languages, but Calixto knows different languages.
And so does Gaia, and the grammar and words keep getting muddled in my mind.
God,
Freya says. We need a different getaway plan, Vivianne says. She won't be able to control the veil like this. This room is all shadows and stone arches, like a crypt beneath a cathedral.
Why?
I ask, trying to focus on the conversation. It keeps me grounded, reminds me who I really am, Calixto. No, hang on, Nia, I am... Nia.
Because we need to go through the veil, Vivianne says.
She sounds furious.
Okay, we did that once. We can do it again, I point out.
Raphael looks at me.
I agree.
Raphael, Vivianne's voice is steely. She can't get us through. If what she says is true, she's gone.
It's a marvel she can still talk, but we don't know who she even is anymore.
And there's no way in hell she can focus enough to use her sentinel powers.
Yes, I can.
I know it's true. I feel both my powers pulsating inside me, awake.
She can, Raphael repeats after me. She'll get us through. There's no other way in any case. The royal prince has probably already found out that his map is gone. We have to get out of here tonight.
The map, I suddenly recall. We have the map?
He flashes me a dazzling smile.
We have, thanks to you.
Okay, good.
Raphael slides his arm around my waist and helps me stand. I stare at the torchlight flickering on the walls.
Where are we?
In an empty room, in the lower level of the Chateau de Rêve,
says Freya. She's a chambermaid. I narrow my eyes at her.
No, she's pretending to be a chambermaid.
She's a human agent. I should tell Talon at once, and then I'll finally have his respect.
No, hang on. I'm Nia. I shut my eyes and take a deep breath, trying to pry apart the pieces of my mind that belong to me. We step out to one of the hallways in the chateau. I'm completely disoriented. Don't even recall how we got here. But Raphael leads us confidently. He sets a brisk pace, fast enough to get out quickly, but slow enough to avoid making too much noise and draw unwanted attention from the servants down here. We pass a small kitchen and a threadbare woven rug. The ceilings are lower than the ones upstairs. We walk past numerous rooms identical to the empty crypt we just left. A coat of arms hangs on one wall. I try to keep pace with him, but my head is still shrieking. I see the world through a haze, but Raphael's arm around my waist steadies me. Raphael stops short.
Hang on, we missed a turn.
Are you sure? Vivian asks.
Yeah, we need to go back.
He turns around.
Come on.
I follow him past the threadbare rug, the coat of arms, and 20 or more other rooms. So many rooms.
What the hell?
Raphael mutters, looking around. I think we missed a turn again, Vivian says.
There were no turns, Vivian, I say.
What are you talking about? She snaps. There were a dozen turns. Where's Freya?
My heart thuds. Freya is not with us anymore.
Something's wrong,
Raphael says.
She probably went outside and didn't notice that we weren't with her, Vivian offers.
But I can hear the uncertainty in her voice.
Come on, I'll lead. Through there, see?
She points at a fork in the corridor that we somehow missed before. Now Vivian takes the lead, marching confidently on. We walk past the coat of arms again.
We were here just a second ago, I say.
No, she shoots daggers at me. And you're the last person we should be listening to.
No, see?
I point at the coat of arms.
It's the same antlers and that same threadbare rug. We keep walking back and forth.
Raphael's fingers tighten on my waist.
We're disoriented somehow. Have we been drugged? All we need to do is get outside.
Well, we came from the left passage, I say, so we should probably take the right.
I start walking, but everything seems to be moving slowly. Much too slowly. I'm walking as fast as I can, but I can hardly budge. I look down and realize that my feet are stuck in the threadbare rug, and with each step, I'm getting pulled back. The rug has become a strange muddy goo.
I'm sinking in the rug, I shout in alarm.
Don't shout, Raphael says. Hang on, where's Vivian?
It's just the two of us now, and I'm knee-deep in the rug and sinking faster.
We must have been drugged.
Raphael's grip around my waist is solid, but somehow I'm sinking and he's not.
No, my stomach swoops.
The Castle of Dreams has become the Castle of Nightmares. This is the Dream Stalker's work.
It's obvious now.
Prince Talon must have realized his map is missing, and now he's trapped us.
No way, Raphael says. He doesn't even know who we are.
He doesn't need to. I visited a dozen mines belonging to the prince's confidants, enough to learn things about him. He can sense people's subconscious when they're nearby. We're trying to get out, and we're scared of being caught. That makes us different from everyone else in this place. He's honed in on our minds and wrapped us up in this dream.
Raphael's grip tightens around my waist.
And he knows where we are.
I shake my head. I don't think so, not yet. But if we don't get out, they'll find us eventually.
I'm up to my thighs now in the liquidized rug.
Raphael, I'm drowning in this.
It's in our minds, Raphael says slowly. Nia, even dreams can be controlled if you know it's a dream.
I can't get out of this! I panic as his grip on my waist slips and I sink deeper. Raphael shifts his hold on me, taking my arm in a vice-like grip.
Don't move.
His muscles flex, and he slowly pulls me free. The viscous rug gives way with a disturbing sucking sound. I tumble into Raphael and cling to his steely chest, breathing hard. We have to get out of here. Now.
Hang on.
He shuts his eyes and his black eyelashes cast shadows on his cheeks.
Concentrate. This is in our mind, right? So try to picture us finding the way out. Picture us finding Vivian and Freya on the way.
I do as he says, closing my eyes. It's hard to concentrate, but I do my best to imagine us reunited with Vivian and Freya, grabbing them by the hands and fleeing the castle.
Okay, I whisper.
Come on.
He's holding my hand as we walk, and there, at the far end of the hall, is the door that leads to the stairs and the sea. I can even see the glittering waves through the window. It's working, I say softly. Raphael nods. We rush for the door and hear a shout for help. Turning, we see Vivian and Freya running toward us, a wall of flames roaring down the hall behind them. Smoke billows.
stinging my lungs and eyes. A fit of coughing racks my body, and though I know it's just a dream, I can't make the flames go away. The heat sears my skin. We're going to burn. Someone grabs me by the wrist, and I'm running, my eyes streaming from the smoke. Is the door gone again? We're trapped in a waking nightmare. Over my coughing, I hear Raphael shouting instructions to Vivian and Freya, telling them it's not real, that they have to imagine us getting out. We're lost again. We can't find the door. Soon, I fear we'll be back at the beginning, back to the threadbare rug and the coat of arms. The Dreamstalker is toying with us. We're his puppets, and he is pulling the strings.
No, not there, Raphael says. Over here.
Gripping my wrist, he pulls me to a random kitchen door. He yanks it open, and salt air washes over me, and a spray of stars twinkles in the night sky. Stone stairs zigzag down to the sea. We're free. I inhale, the wind whipping at me. The night air is incredibly clear, and I can fill my lungs at last. Raphael has led us out of the nightmare.
Come on, we don't have much time, he says.
We run down the stairwell back to the dock where we left the boat. When we reach it, I almost sob in relief. We made it. I can't believe we got out. As I step into the boat, Vivian cuts the mooring rope with a knife. We push off into the sea, and oars plunge into the waves as Vivian and Raphael row. The sea spray drenches me, and I hold on to the edges of the boat. Up ahead, the shimmering veil waits. Strangely, the misty magical barrier feels like safety.
Nia, will you be able to get us through? Raphael asks.
Yes, just get us closer. The current is a real bastard, Vivian grunts as she pulls at her oar. It's hard to row in this thing.
Yeah,
Raphael grimaces as seawater dampens his shirt. I listen to the oar striking the water, staring at the veil. It doesn't seem to be getting closer. I glance back. We haven't left the dock.
It's the bloody current, Raphael shouts over the waves.
Aren't we in a bay? Freya is heaving for breath. There shouldn't be a current. I stare at the murky water. Even in the dark, I can see the water churning as they struggle with the oars. Storm clouds gather overhead, blocking out the moon and the stars. Shadows gather around us. Now we're actually moving. The powerful current pulls us along with it, but not toward the shore. We're spinning in a circle.
We're trapped in a whirlpool, Raphael says, alarmed.
Fear grips my heart as I cling to the boat. The whirlpool is enormous, a yawning void. The boat whirls faster and faster, around and around, as Vivian and Raphael try to row us out. No, I whisper. We're not trapped in the whirlpool. We're trapped in the waking nightmare. We never left the Chateau des Rêves. Chapter 27. Rain pours from the sky and the water churns, our tiny boat rocking in the speeding torrent. Raphael shouts instructions that are impossible to hear as he tries to free the boat from the deadly current. Vivian's oar is wrenched out of her hands. I make the mistake of glancing at the center of the enormous whirlpool, an abyss waiting to swallow us. A void. Nothingness. The end. With seawater spattering me and my heart thudding with terror, it's hard to convince myself that none of this is real. But it's not, I'm sure of it. Whirlpools such as this simply don't exist in the normal world. That's a nightmare thing. Raphael was wrong. Although the dream is in our minds, we have no control over it. Our fantasy of escape is just that, a fantasy. The Dreamstalker let us think we were escaping, like a cat toying with a mouse. But we're still there. Our bodies are still in the Chateau des Rêves, enfolded in a terrible nightmare. Sooner or later, the Dark Prince and his guards will find us. Fear crackles through my nerves. If I know I'm dreaming, can I force myself to wake? I pinch myself, but that doesn't help. Pain is real in this nightmare, and it's not a way out. If we drown here, I feel disturbingly certain that would mean the end for us. What does the Dreamstalker want? I've heard his thoughts for years. He craves pleasure and beauty, but he always feels alone. If I'm in the chateau right now, as I suspect, could I slip into his mind as I accidentally did before? Maybe. Only then we can find a way out of this nightmare. The thought of going anywhere near him, much less his thoughts, scares the shit out of me. I've already come close to losing my sanity by invading too many people's thoughts. It would be dumb to risk drowning in a sea of consciousness again. But do I have a choice? Not if I wish to escape this nightmare. Gripping the slippery wooden edge of the boat, I close my eyes and focus on the magic inside me. the frenetic, high-pitched violet magic that allows me to hear another person's thoughts. As I summon it, I recall the way the prince's mind felt as it touched mine. Dark, brooding, obsessed with sex. I channel my telepathic powers at that mind and feel something brush my thoughts, a shadow of another entity. Dark, alluring, seductive. But right now, above all, furious. But it's hard to concentrate with the boat heaving up and down, threatening to spit me into the void. My fingers tighten on the wet wood. With racing breath, I grasp at that other mind, fumbling with my powers, stretching them toward his dark temptation like I've never done before. And then, from far away, a voice.
"Where are you, little dreamers? Where are you hiding?"
His voice is velvety smooth, but a sharp fury slides beneath it. I can feel his wrath as he holds us captive.
"I will drown you, and you'll wish you were dead. But you'll keep drowning, unable to breathe, water filling your lungs. In dreams, death cannot save you."
I cling to his thoughts, ignoring the terror filling my heart at the thought of that eternal hell. There must be a way out.
"Ah, it's you again, isn't it? The little telepath in my thoughts. I can feel you. I may not have seen you, but I felt you. I can let you out of this. You only need to tell me where you are."
Fear vibrates through me. I clench my teeth and try to calm my mind. He can't read my thoughts, but he can feel my subconscious, and my subconscious is terrified.
"Now where are you and your friends hiding, little telepath? If you show me, I'll let you wake up. It'll save us all time, and you a lot of pain. Trust me, you don't want to be in this nightmare much longer. I could make it exquisitely painful for you."
The boat groans and shudders and then splits at the center. I plunge into the sea and sink beneath the water. I kick my legs to rise to the surface, floundering wildly as a wave crashes on top of me. Frantic, I fight my way to the surface again, gasping for air. It's nearly impossible to focus on the prince's thoughts. The water is icy and my muscles are seizing up.
"There's no way out, little telepath. I'm in complete control of you. Your body and your mind. I have the power to kill you or let you live. Submit to me."
Another hard wave pushes me under. I know the truth. If Talon finds us, the only thing next on my schedule is being slowly tortured to death. I try to hold my breath, but I'm too late. My mouth fills with water. Water in my throat, in my lungs. I can't breathe. Darkness is all around me, and the bone-penetrating cold. And I know that the prince is speaking the truth. Only he can free me from this nightmare, and he won't. Not until he finds where we're hiding. In my terror and desperation, I draw on my powers again, trying to read deeper into his thoughts. But I can't focus. Instead of summoning the violet magic, I accidentally draw on my sentinel powers too. My lungs burn as red and violet magic entwine, a tangle I can't unwind. A twisted, magical hybrid that shouldn't exist. Telepathy that shatters and breaks things. I aim that raw energy at the prince's mind and let it erupt. I can feel his surprise as the surge of power hits him. I manage to snap something inside his mind, and he reels back in pain, breaking contact. The darkness around me flickers, and I gasp and open my eyes. I'm in the room in the Chateau des Rêves, lying on the floor. Raphael, Vivienne, and Freya are all lying on the stones. Their eyes fly open. Freya gasps, as if still searching for air, and Vivienne's hands jerk as though she's still trying to swim, and then they all freeze. Vivienne is the first to lift herself up. She looks around, her face as pale as milk. We're back. My teeth are chattering, and the cold stings my skin. My fingers are numb. "We never left," I say. "It was all a nightmare, including the moment we thought we got away and the boat."
"And now?" Raphael asks grimly.
I clear my throat. "I think I got us out of the nightmare." His eyebrows flick up.
"You got us out? How?"
Shivering wildly, I force myself to stand. "I'll explain later. We don't have much time. They're searching for us. The Dreamstalker knows we're still here. It's only a matter of time before he recovers and traps us again." Freya glances at the door. "Won't he send his guards after us?" I think about the flash of pain and surprise I felt when I let my powers explode in the prince's psyche and cracked something in his mind. "I bought us some time, but we have to leave now."
2 months ago, they would have argued. Vivienne would have asked who the fuck I thought I was. Freya would have subtly rolled her eyes. But they follow my suggestion without discussion. In the past few months at Avalon Tower, I've managed to earn their trust. When we leave the room this time, we head straight for the door. This time, the rug doesn't suck me in. At last, we're outside, and the night air stings my skin. I know it's not Arctic, but it feels that way. Does anyone else know yet that the prince was hit with a magical attack? Is he sending people after us? I hope to God's not. I can't imagine what the prince's vengeance might be like. I glance back at the castle, but don't see any signs of alarm. I breathe in the cool, salty air and long for the comfort of the fur coat. Raphael sees me shivering and wraps his arm around me as we hurry down the stairs.
Did he see you?
Asks Raphael.
Does he know what you look like, if he sends guards searching for the telepath?
I shake my head. No, he never looked at me. He saw inside my memories, but that's it. Keeping to the shadows, we hurry down the zigzagging stairs overlooking the rocky beach. Despite the lacerating cold, I feel a wild euphoria. It was a near miss, but we escaped. I glanced up at the stairs. Is it really possible that dawn hasn't arrived yet? The past few hours felt like days, stretched out through the nightmare. When we reach the dock, I half expect the boat to be in pieces, shattered by the enormous whirlpool. But it's still intact, waiting for us. My fur coat sits dry on a bench. The four of us hop in, and I pull the coat around me, trying to warm myself. In no time, Vivienne and Raphael are churning their oars into the sea. This time, we're off without a hitch. The marine wind whips at me, and I hug myself tightly, trying to feel my blood flowing again, my muscles softening after the glacial post-magic chill. Still, my teeth hammer against each other. Ship, Freya says, her voice low. I look back and see a large ship moving fast and piercing the water. The misty, pearly veil glows behind it, and I see it in silhouette. It's aimed unerringly straight at us. Another one there. Vivienne nods to the north, where a large shadow is looming closer. My stomach drops. The ships are moving between us and the veil. Our anchored sailboat waits for us on the other side.
How do they find us? Asks Raphael sharply.
The prince. I swallow. He knew we were heading for the boat. He saw it in the nightmare and read our intentions. He must have given the order to search for us on the water. They're catching up, Freya mutters. Cannons thunder in the distance. Then a terrible shriek, becoming louder and louder.
Grape shot, Raphael shouts. Everyone down.
I flatten myself on the bottom of the rowboat, and a second later, something screams past me. Splashes echo all around us as the deadly shots hit the water, tiny cannon rounds aimed to wound and kill people. Grape shot scatters, and doesn't need to be accurate. Our pursuers don't need to sink our boat. They only have to hurt us and slow us down so they can catch up.
Faster, Vivienne grunts, sitting up.
She and Raphael row as quickly as they can toward the shimmering mist. The hum of the veil buzzes over my frigid skin.
They're getting closer, Freya shouts.
Vivienne's hurt,
Raphael says.
I'm fine,
she says, though blood pours down her arm. After a few seconds, she drops the oar into the water and groans. I lunge and grab it before it's lost.
Can you row, Nia? Raphael asks. Can you row and lift the veil at the same time?
It would have been better if I switched seats with Freya, but there's no time. I can do it. My muscles are frigid with the cold, but if I can't row, we're as good as dead. I lock my sights on the veil and start to row. I've only done this a few times, on short boat trips on a lake or a pond. Rowing in the ocean isn't the same. I know that I need to paddle in rhythm with Raphael, and I do my best to adjust to his pace. The veil thrums loudly against my skin as we pull at the oars. The cannons boom again. I hunch in my seat and pray, but keep rowing. One of the rounds hits the boat, and Freya lets out a shriek of pain. I don't know if she's hurt or dead, and I can't afford to look. We're nearly at the veil, way closer than I thought. The ships are almost on top of us. No time to stop or focus my powers. Raphael and I keep rowing as I mentally focus inward, grasping at the blooming crimson magic. I let it swell, then fling it desperately at the veil. The hum goes silent as our boat plunges into the mist. We drift through to the other side, and I heave out a slow, shuddering breath and look back. Freya is still alive. The ships in pursuit are maneuvering. The cannons boom again, but in the dark night, with the veil hiding us, the shot goes wide. Shivering, I let myself relax. Not only did we make it out, but we've got the map with us. Chapter 28. I blink slowly, trying to focus on Rythe, who is standing at the lectern stroking his blonde beard. Light streams in the tall, mullioned windows over the rows of students. The seneschal drones on. I think he's talking about the veil. It's been 4 days since we returned from our mission on Jersey, but my head still feels foggy. Even now, the residual thoughts of a dozen other people fill my mind like static, and I get terrible, debilitating headaches. My only respite is the constant supply of herbal tea from Tana. It's nearly impossible to concentrate, which is unfortunate. The culling is coming up fast, and I'm struggling to learn anything, despite staying up till 2 a.m. every night studying.
"No wall in history has ever been as effective as the veil," Rythe says. "MI-13 agents can't swim or tunnel underneath, or even fly over the veil. There are some rare magical items, orbs and crystals and such, that provide some protection from veil magic, but they're unstable, and many die trying to use them. Oberon's mages keep the veil raised, stopping humans from invading their territory. Unfortunately, our only way of reliably going through the veil is with our sentinels. At the moment, we have only one qualified sentinel. As my brilliant niece Genevra and I were just discussing, our command has been forced to resort to using untrained, subpar alternatives."
He cuts me a sharp look, and the rest of the class turns to stare at me, as though I've done something terrible.
"Even though we all know," he goes on, "that until a cadet passes the culling, he or she hasn't proven what it takes to function as an agent of Camelot. But these are desperate times indeed. Desperate times."
I meet his eyes calmly. Untrained, subpar alternatives. That's me. And yet without me, the last mission would not have happened at all. On the benches across from me, I see Tarquin and Horatio smirk. Tarquin mouths, "subpar." Serana, sitting by my side, tightens her fist and her pencil snaps in half. I smile at her and hand her a spare.
"Every agent needs to be intimately familiar with the veil," Rythe continues. "We cannot have undercover agents gawking at it like fools, drawing attention to themselves. This is the reason for the field training mission that leaves this evening."
A murmur of excitement runs through the hall. This field training mission has been almost all anyone has talked about for the past few days. All the cadets and the majority of instructors are leaving on a ship. The plan is to take them on a brief 3-day tour along the veiled border. Everyone except me. Raphael already let me know that since I'm very familiar with the veil, there's no point in me going. Instead, he wants to use this time to work on my sentinel magic, preparing me for the culling. And given how foggy my brain has been, having the extra time to prepare isn't the worst thing in the world. We've all been foregoing sleep, cramming maps and information and fey grammar rules into our skulls. I've been helping Serana with her fey language while practicing my lockpicking skills for one of the tests. Serana does her best to help Tana and me with our fighting abilities. I rub my eyes, fighting off the exhaustion. When Rythe lists the cities that the veil borders, Serana nods off. As her head bobs, I elbow her. She snores and startles awake.
"Ms. O'Rourke,"
Rythe's sharp tone pierces the hall as he addresses Serana. She blinks blearily. "Yes, sir?"
"Since you've been so attentive, perhaps you could list 4 cities in France that the Vale's southern border cuts through."
Incorrect. That wasn't... I was just thinking out loud.
"I assume thinking out loud is the only way you'd get any thinking done."
He snorts. More laughter from the Pendragons. My spare pencil snaps in Serana's grip. Rythe's lips curl.
"By the time we leave tonight, I want you to submit to me a paper listing 4 of those cities with the names of our contacts there and how best to get in touch with them. You too, Ms. Melisande, since we all know that ignorance can be quite infectious. That will be all."
The room fills with the sound of rustling paper and murmuring as everyone stands up to go to dinner. "That utter wanker," Serana mutters as she crumples her notes into her bag.
"Watch it,"
Darius says in a whisper.
"He might hear you."
As we head for the dining hall, Serana touches my arm. "Sorry, Nia, I didn't mean to get you in trouble." Don't worry about it. I adjust the bag on my shoulder. The veil is sort of an inverted U. I choose Bordeaux, Poitiers, Bourges, and Marseille or Avignon. And I already know the contact names and everything. We'll do the essay in no time at all.
You're incredible, Serana says, relieved. I was sure it would take hours, and I still need to pack for the training mission.
How do you manage to keep so bloody calm?
Darius asks me.
Ryther's constantly making snide remarks about you.
The Pendragons hate all demi-fae, but they're clearly targeting you. I shrug. The truth is, compared to the Dreamstalker's torments, Ryth's barbed remarks don't trouble me at all. I don't care what he thinks.
We cross into the majestic chamber, where the sunlight pours through towering windows onto lavishly set tables. The portraits of Queen Guinevere and King Arthur loom over us all. I walk to the cadet's table, doing my best to avoid contact with other people. The last thing I need is more telepathic voices ricocheting in my skull.
I can't wait to see the veil, Darius says. I've never seen it before.
I'm excited just to leave Camelot, Serana says. I haven't stepped out of these walls in a year.
I sigh. I think I'm going to miss you guys when I'm all alone in my room.
Serana drops down at a table with empty chairs.
Sure you will. I bet you can't wait to have it all to yourself without my snoring and Tana hogging the bathroom.
I smile at her. She doesn't realize how much I've come to love having friends in my life.
Hi, Nia.
A woman across the hall shouts my name, and I turn to see her smiling at me. She's next to a man with platinum blonde hair. Both of them grin and wave. Flustered, I wave back.
Fans of yours, Serana says. We got around about the mission. Everyone knows that you took down the Dreamstalker.
I don't have fans, I laugh. And unfortunately, I did not take him down. The man is still alive and well. But maybe I feel a little flicker of pride as I scoop some wildflower salad onto my plate. It's an Avalon Tower classic of pansies, violets, dandelion leaves, and an elderflower vinaigrette. The main course is wild mushrooms with rice, seasoned with butter and thyme. The rich scent of it makes my stomach rumble. Already my mouth is watering and my mood brightens. At first, when I went on missions, I was treated with suspicion and jealousy. Tarquin and the Pendragons spread around the term public bus, then naughty Nia, and a whole host of other names. For months, others in the academy followed the Pendragon's lead, whispering Tarquin's nicknames, sometimes painting them on my door. That changed after the last mission. Now, a different sort of rumor has spread. I don't know how, because everything that happened was supposedly classified. But people know enough to realize that I played an important role in the mission. I take a bite of the buttery mushrooms and rice, savoring the faint taste of truffle oil. Serana has already shared some of the wild gossip she heard about the mission. That I single-handedly fought the Dreamstalker, straddled him, and snapped his neck. Others say that I saved everyone by galloping on a stolen horse across the island of Jersey. But the story she found most outrageous was one where the agents had all been trapped in an endless nightmare by the Dreamstalker, and that somehow I broke us out using only my mind. I sip my mead. In any case, the general opinion of me has definitely shifted for the better. And while Tarquin tries to keep the mockery alive, everyone else seems to be losing interest. Tana plucks a fluffy berry pavlova and drops it onto her plate.
And how is Ryth today?
An arsehole, Darius answers. Wouldn't expect anything else of him.
Are you ready for the big trip, Tana? I ask.
Tana isn't going to see the Vale. Like me, she's seen it often enough. But they need her with them to sound the warning in case of danger. The Academy doesn't want to lose their entire year of cadets because they failed to take proper precautions.
Yes, all packed. Tana gently nudges Serana. You'll forget to pack your socks, so I already packed them for you.
Well, now that you told me that I'll forget, I'll definitely remember, Serana says, her mouth full. I like to do the opposite of what people expect.
No, you will not. The cards do not lie.
Her gaze slides to me.
And speaking of which, I'm still wondering about that lover's card. Remember a lover from the past? It wouldn't be Raphael, would it?
My stomach drops. Sometimes it's deeply inconvenient having a psychic friend. He's taken, isn't he? I say, flustered.
Serana, when you first brought me to Raphael's room, Ginevra was in there.
I try to look casual as I drum my fingertips on the wooden table. And Raphael wasn't wearing a shirt. Aren't romantic relationships strictly forbidden here? Guess we shouldn't tell anyone about it, or ever bring it up again. The words all come out in a frantic tumble, and Serana arches an eyebrow. Now, what is going on here exactly? You and Raphael? I shrugged, trying to look casual. Don't be ridiculous. He hates me, remember?
Tana narrows her eyes at me. But you knew him in the past, didn't you? And it wasn't just a friendship.
My stomach swoops again.
Me?
We were just talking about Ginevra. Ginevra, I repeat.
You didn't answer my question.
She really doesn't want you to get kicked out for something dumb, like shagging an instructor, says Serana. You'd better not lick, or otherwise touch him while we're away and you two are alone.
The lover from the past,
Tana prompts again. My cheeks flush. Fine, I knew him, yes, ages ago. It was in Bordeaux, and he kissed me once, and then said I was a spoiled American and never spoke to me again until I saw him in the south of France. The day I met you, Tana. He fully ghosted me, and I've never shagged him. Dickhead? Did you see his knob? Asks Serana. I'm just very curious, because I imagine it. I have not.
Darius rests his chin in his hands.
I'd risk getting kicked out for someone who looked like him, honestly.
Tana's stare is penetrating. The card suggested that a love from the past is also in your future.
I take a long sip of mead. Well, anyway, good news, everyone. My headaches are gone. I'm right as rain. Serana nods. You're doing that thing again.
Tana grips her glass of mead so hard, she's at risk of breaking it. Okay, you need to be absolutely ready when the tests come and focused. You cannot fail. You and I have to pass, Nia, and you cannot get kicked out.
I get it. My voice comes out a little sharp. I'm studying as hard as I can. No pressure, right?
Why are you so intense about Nia passing?
Darius asks.
I mean, we all really need to pass, right? Why are you harassing the poor girl?
Tana, Serana, and I exchange quick glances.
Yeah, Serana says. Tana's just really worried that Nia will fail the fighting part. But I keep telling her she doesn't need to worry. Nia can kick anyone's arse these days, even the Dream Stalker. At this point, she could thrash a demon of the abyss in a one-on-one fight.
Some demons are actually pacifists and refuse to fight even when cornered, Tana says, staring at the window.
Serana's forehead scrunches up. I was just speaking metaphorically, I guess. There are no demons in the world, Tana.
Her face has gone pale.
Right?
Right. Tana sips from her mead and smiles faintly. It's better to think that.
Well, that's the thought that's going to fester,
Darius mutters. Anyway, you don't need to worry. I spear a strawberry with my fork, though I've lost my appetite. Tana's prophecy is stressful enough without her constantly reminding me of it, then adding in a whole bunch of other stressful predictions. The sad truth is, I'm not at the top of my game, and my diametric magic is still wildly unpredictable and out of my control. At least for the upcoming month, I will be out of danger. The only thing I have to do is master every spy skill that exists and memorize the entire Fae history. Darius loses interest in our discussion, his eyes following Nolan, a tall cadet who goes with me to Amon's advanced class for Fae language. Serana rolls her eyes at me. Darius has been obsessing about Nolan for weeks.
I'll catch up with you girls later,
Darius mutters, getting up and walks after Nolan. I don't get Darius's taste in men, Serana tells me. That Nolan guy is nothing special. I don't know, he looks nice. And he's wicked smart. I prefer more shoulders on my men. More than two, I ask, bemused, fishing the last bits of my salad from my plate. When I look up again, Tana is staring at me, her eyes wide. A feeling of dread sinks into my stomach. What? I ask.
The shadows are closing in. Death hunts you. During the trials, the darkness will start to envelop you. If you don't survive, we all die. England is lost. Scotland and Wales, too. The rot will creep from the cliffs of Dover all the way to the Highlands. It starts during the trials.
She takes an enormous bite of her berry pavlova without breaking eye contact as she chews. I'm not sure what's more unnerving. Her disturbing prophecy? Or the way she stares at me as she eats? A cold fear settles over me. Chapter 29. Dear Mom, I chew on the end of my pen. The only sounds at Lothian Tower tonight are the rain hammering the windows and the occasional clap of thunder. It feels eerie here, abandoned. For 3 days, I've been mostly alone in my room, cramming for my tests and practicing my sentinel powers. Lightning flashes outside. A few seconds later, thunder booms,
vibrating the stone walls and making the candles gutter in the candelabrum. I stare at the blank page. I hadn't realized how much noise I'm surrounded by at all times. Serana loudly knocking things around or swearing under her breath, sometimes randomly breaking into song. Tana reading the cards yet again for Darius, checking if love is on the horizon. And through the door, I can usually hear the sounds of cadets talking loudly, their voices echoing in the cavernous halls. Now the silence is eerie. Every now and then, I convince myself I can hear the faint screams of everyone being murdered by Mordred Kingslayer, the echoes of centuries ago floating over the stone. It's a good time to write to Mom. Yet as I stare at the page, I don't feel like I have anything to say. I want to calm her, to reason with her. But her latest scathing letter lies on my desk, practically radiating anger and dysfunction. And it's not like I can tell her I'll be back soon. Or hell, even tell her where I am. I sigh and try again. This trip has been eye-opening. The beaches and the coast towns of... My pen blurbs a glob of ink, staining the paper and blurring my words. I try to blot the mistake, but the letters smudge, and now the word beaches looks like bitch. I take a fresh piece of paper and start again. Dear Mother, I hope you forgive me. Another ink blot. Now forgive looks like forget. I grab another pen and a third piece of paper. Dear Mother, finally I am out of your grasp, you pathetic hag. I don't need to listen to your constant complaints and narcissistic chaos, and I don't need to clean your puke off the... I stare at the parchment, horrified. I don't know what made me write that. My hands are shaking now. I stand up and my chair tips over and clutters against the wood floor. I bend to pick it up and accidentally hit a pile of Serana's books. The books topple, papers scattering everywhere. Fucking hell, what's wrong with me? I just wanted to get in touch with my mom and I'm losing it. While I'm stacking up the books, the framed portrait of Merlin falls off the wall and tumbles onto Tana's bedside table. I leap to grab it, but I'm too late. It drops atop the candle and catches on fire. Flames rise from the bedside table, and the acrid scent of smoke coils into the air. Heart racing, I snatch a blanket to put out the flames. What the hell is happening? As I try to smother the fire, the room seems to be coming apart around me. Vines snake off the walls, writhing in the air. The diamond panes in the windows shatter, spraying glass over the room. The wood in the wardrobe and desks turns dark and soft, becoming rotten and weak. The desk crumbles into decaying pieces before me. I struggle to catch my breath, blood roaring in my ears. Cracks form in the stone walls and pieces of mortar start to crumble. Across the room, a heavy wooden ceiling beam crashes to the floor. The room is rumbling, as if an earthquake is shaking Camelot. An enormous slab of plaster falls from the ceiling, missing me by a hair. I scream in panic and try to rush for the door, but it won't open. The wood is warped and decaying. Holes form in the wall, and then entire sections collapse above the windows, exposing a starry sky with a drift of clouds in the distance. Outside, the shadows are shifting, an enormous silhouette that blots out the moon and stars. A gargantuan figure of darkness. A void, shaped like a monstrous warrior. As tall as the tower itself, maybe even taller. The vast silhouette lifts a huge arm and points at me. And I feel another presence inside my mind, amused and delighted by my horror.
There you are, little telepath. I found you. I hear you crying and no one is coming to help.
I can feel his ice-cold wrath, but also his fascination. He doesn't know what I look like yet, but he can sneak into my mind and sense my fear of him, like a cat who's found a particularly lively mouse. And now, he wants to play.
You can't escape me, little telepath. As long as you go to sleep at night, I will always find you. This is my realm, my domain, one of fear and desire. And here, you are completely under my control.
The shadow clenches a fist, and the floor around me is suddenly swarming with snakes, crawling over my feet, slithering, hissing. I'm frozen with fear. Can't even breathe.
You shouldn't have stolen from me. You have no idea what powers you're toying with. Where are you, telepath?
The silhouette has deep blue eyes, the prince's eyes. The snakes writhe up my body, and I open my mouth to scream. I bolt upright in my chair with a shout of fear. My heart is pounding wildly, hammering against my chest.
I'd fallen asleep at my desk, and the candles went out. Darkness cloaks the room, but everything seems solid again. My unfinished letter to my mother lies in front of me. Rain is still hammering against the windows. With a shaking breath, I search for the dream stalker's thoughts. But no, he's gone. I'm awake. Alone. And then, the shadows move, and I realize that I'm not as alone as I'd thought. Chapter 30. A shadowy figure stands by Serana's bed. For one hopeful moment, I think it's Serana, returned already. But no, that doesn't make sense. For one thing, he's well over 6 feet tall and wrapped in a black cloth from head to toe. Only his eyes are visible, golden and malevolent. And there's something else about him, a strange vibration emanating from his body. My heart skips a beat. I just barely have time to register the curved scimitar in each hand before he lunges at me. Behind him, lightning flashes and thunder rumbles through the stone walls. Reflexes take over as my daily training with Vivian starts to pay off. I grab the thing closest to me, my tea mug, and hurl it at him. He tries to dodge, but I caught him by surprise, and the cup smashes into the side of his head. He stumbles, giving me enough time to jump out of range of the scimitars. He lets out a strange hiss, and it takes me a second to realize that he's laughing. My heart thuds violently in my chest, my breathing coming in short bursts. I try to assess his body language the way Raphael has been teaching me. Based on his casual stance and the way he looks at me, the careless way he holds his blades, he doesn't see me as a threat. I can hardly blame him. I'm a tiny, unarmed girl in pajamas he found sleeping at her desk. And there he is, towering over me, a warrior with a weapon in each hand. But as long as he underestimates me, I have an advantage. I pretend to stumble, kneeling by my bed, letting out a shriek of fear, raising my left hand to protect my face. He takes a step forward, lifting one of his scimitars to slash at me. Blood roars in my ears as I grab for the dagger I keep hidden under my pillow. With its smooth obsidian hilt in my palm, I strike, aiming for his stomach. He blocks me with his other scimitar. Still, I manage to cut his fingers, and he lets out a hoarse curse, dropping one of his blades. I'm already rolling away, his other blade barely missing me. I jump to my feet. For a sliver of a second, we stare at each other. He's not underestimating me anymore, which is deeply unfortunate. His wounded hand is curled into a fist, dripping with blood, but he still holds a scimitar in his other hand. I'm by Serana's bed now, and it's a mess, like always. And, like always, she's got weapons scattered on and around it. I quickly grab a sword, holding it in front of me. I can't let him see how heavy it feels in my hand. I have only the most rudimentary training with swords, but he doesn't need to know that. I let my lips quirk a bit, showing confidence that I don't have, masking my real emotions. He doesn't lunge forward. Instead, he eyes me cautiously, taking his time. And then, he whispers something that sounds fey, though I can hardly make out what he's saying. Around us, the air begins to hum, and a charge brushes over my skin. A shimmering mist rises from the floor, tendrils curling towards me. My stomach drops. It's Veil Mist. This is a Veil Mage. That vibration I noticed before is the Veil's hum, coming from within his body. He doesn't need to cut me down. He can kill me with magic. Or so he thinks. I summon my sentinel powers. I don't need to conjure up powerful emotions because this asshole coming into my room at night and trying to kill me has done the job already. Concentrating, I focus my magic at the mist, disrupting it as the tendrils touch me. The hum in my ears disappears and the mist curls harmlessly around me. The mage stumbles, disoriented by my response, and I lunge forward and stab at him. He parries my sword, nearly tearing it from my fingers. I jump away as he swings clumsily at me. All this time, he's made sure to stay between me and the door, blocking my escape. But now, it doesn't matter, because I finally hear what I've been waiting for since I let out that scream. Footsteps pounding through the hall over the flagstones. Distant still, but I can feel the vibrations, and through the walls I hear Raphael's muffled voice calling my name. The intruder doesn't even turn around. Does he not hear Raphael? But then, I hear him whispering again, and the mist rises around the door. He lets out his eerie laugh as I stare in horror, realizing what's about to happen.
Raphael will barge through that door straight into the mist. It will kill him in seconds. I let my fury course through me and summon my magic to disable the mist, except this time, the mage is ready for it. Before I can snuff out the power of the mist, he slices at me, forcing me to jump back, breaking my focus. The mist rises all around the door, shimmering in its unearthly colors.
Nia!
Raphael cries, closer now. I gather my powers and the mage lunges again. I dodge, his blade whispering inches away from my throat, my concentration disrupted.
Nia, I'm coming,
Raphael calls outside the door. I tug at my power for the third time. The mage strikes once more. This time I ignore his attack, flinging my magic at the mist. The hum stops, the veil mist flickering. The mage's scimitar sinks into my stomach, and searing agony spreads through my body as the blade plunges in. I try to scream, but I can't. I make a strangled sound as the mage rips his scimitar from my gut. The door bursts open and Raphael charges in. Blinded with pain, I fall to my knees. The mage whirls and my thoughts become hazy, drowned by the horror of my lacerated stomach. I try to speak and taste blood on my lips. Raphael slashes the mage's throat. My vision blurs as he kneels by my side and curls his powerful arms around me.
I've got you, love. Don't worry. I've got you.
I try to answer, but I can't breathe. I can't move. And I can feel my life fading away. Chapter 31. As the pain ebbs, heat spreads through my body. I'm in Raphael's lap, folded in his arms. His hand is pressed on my belly and his healing magic spills over me. My heart races and my breath speeds up. His warm magic kisses my skin. Such an intense feeling that I almost forget the horror of what just happened. I hardly feel the pain anymore. Raphael is pale, and there's something in his expression that I never expected to see. Fear. So the man does feel emotions.
Are you okay?
His voice cracks.
Does it still hurt?
I shake my head. Right now, the pain is just a horrible memory, replaced by the warmth pouring from his fingertips over the flat of my stomach and the hollows of my hips. His muscular arms wrap protectively around me. I feel completely safe in his embrace.
How does it look?
I ask. He looks down at my stomach and pulls his hand aside.
Better. Almost healed.
I feel the rumble of his deep voice through his chest, and I relax into him. His magic is intoxicating. I wonder if it feels this sensual to everyone he heals. Or just the women who know he's bad news and can't resist him anyway. He gazes at me intensely, his expression twisted with worry. Maybe it's the sight of the blood soaking my pajama shirt and shorts.
I'm okay,
I say again. I never thought I'd have to reassure Raphael. He nods, but I'm still curled in his lap, his hand pressed on my skin. Heat pulses beneath his palm, making my breath hitch.
You're okay.
Is he reassuring himself?
Maybe I should clean the blood off.
He nods once, then scoops me up against his enormous chest.
I can walk now,
I protest. He's not listening. Cradling me in his arms, he manages to get the bathroom door open with one hand. Moonlight streams in the windows over the room. Gently, he lays me in the porcelain tub. He clears his throat.
It's dark, but I'll turn around. I could leave you, but I need to know you've healed.
For once, Raphael's ice-cold composure has abandoned him, and he's rattled. While I sit in the bath, he lights some of the candles on the shelves. They cast a cozy glow over the bathroom, the warm light wavering over the walls. He sits with his back to me. I feel a twinge of pain as I shift and twist in the tub, stripping out of my blood-soaked pajamas and underwear. I drop them on the floor next to the bath, horrified at the mess. Blood runs from the pajamas onto the stone floor. I turn on the tap, and hot water fills the tub. Steam curls into the air, and rain still patters against the window panes. It's comfortable in here.
Raphael, your powers are truly miraculous. That would have been fatal.
They're not my powers,
he murmurs.
I'm just the conduit.
Well, if you weren't such a good conduit, I'd be dead.
I know,
he says quietly to the wall. I glance at his broad shoulders, hating how much I wish he were in the water with me.
As the bath fills, I splash water over my body, cleaning myself off. My fingers run over the place where I'd been stabbed. My skin is healed, smooth. Maybe a tiny ridge, but not much else. He was a Vale mage, I say.
We'll talk about it later. Just forget him for now, Nia. I'm going to make sure you stay safe. That was fucking...
His voice trails off. I've never seen you flustered before.
Flustered isn't exactly the word for it.
It's so odd, but right now, I can't remember what the pain felt like, even though it happened a few minutes ago. Blood swirls around the bathwater, and I take a deep breath. I don't want to stay in the murky bath much longer. I stand, letting the water drip down my body in warm rivulets. Can you hand me a washcloth? I ask. He stands and pulls a folded washcloth and towel from a chair, keeping his gaze averted as he hands them to me. At this moment, I almost wish he were slightly less of a gentleman. I want to feel his hands on me again. I want him to wrap me in those muscular arms. But there are rules, apparently. With the cloth and soap, I wash my body completely. Fully cleaned, I let the bath drain and towel myself off. I step out of the tub and wrap the towel around me. Raphael stands and rubs his forehead, still facing the other direction.
May I see where you were stabbed? I want to make sure it is healed.
Sure. I drop the towel to my hips, wrapping it around my waist. He turns around, then drops into the chair like he's been struck, staring at me. Still damp from the bath, my nipples peek in the cool castle air. Slowly, his eyes rake down my body from my bare breasts to my stomach. He's sitting and I'm standing, but he's so much larger than me that we're hardly at different heights. Gently, he touches my waist and traces his fingers down my belly. I feel as if he's still healing me, his warm magic licking at my skin.
Perfect,
he murmurs, and his eyes flick up to mine.
You are perfect.
As he looks up at me, his pupils dilate. My heart hammers. Don't forget what he is, Nia. Deep down, he's a heartbreaker who can't deal with his own emotions. All it takes is his penetrating silver eyes on me to send molten heat sliding through my veins. And now, I'm forgetting all about the fact that he ghosted me long ago, because his touch dissolves any thought of caution. He tugs me closer, just a little. The next thing I know, I'm sitting in his lap again. His hand slides around the back of my neck, the sensation electrifying. At this point, I've pretty much forgotten about the dead mage in my room and all the years I spent hating this gorgeous man. I only know that the power radiating from his rugged body is making my breath catch. It's not just how he looks. It's him, too, and the way he seems so completely undone by my injury. It's the way he's finally dropped his guard. I curl against him, the towel still slung loosely around my hips. He leans down, his lips hovering close to mine. His magic strokes my body, a hot rush of power that skims over every inch of my bare skin.